My name is Tia, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday night Blue Chip Speaker Meeting at NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with one or more year of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal story is described in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on abluechipspeaker.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Our speaker tonight, I got the opportunity to meet him last November at a retreat in Highlands, North Carolina. And then last Wednesday, I was at a book study, a big book study, and he was a discussion leader. And it was just great because he just brought a more awareness of things that I had read but didn't really understand. So I'm excited to be able to hear his story tonight. Y'all help me welcome Jason.
Hey guys, I'm Jason. I'm an alcoholic and an addict.
Hey,
man, I always start these things off so grateful. If you're like me, I'm lucky to be alive, and everybody in the room is, so we're miracles. And I start off just realizing that, taking a second to breathe that in. It's special that every single one of you are here today, and I'm just honored to be in front of you to share my experience, strength, and hope. So, like a lot of us, right? Everybody's got different things, and I feel like fate at the time takes you down this path, and the choices we make lead it down there. And some things are just the way we're made, some things are circumstance, and some things are just horrible fucking decisions, right? But my life, honestly, started off really, really good. I come from a good home on paper. My mom did a good job of making it appear that everything was right. I mean, we ate dinner as a family 5 nights a week. You know, made sure I was at school. Things were pretty good. We lived in a decent neighborhood. And I was always a troublemaker. I mean, if there's ever an omen of what your life's going to look like, I committed my first federal felony at 5 years old. On my little scooter thing with the wheels, the little Hot Wheels thing, stole all the mail, put it in a garbage bag, took a piss on it, and dropped it in the lake. Well, welcome to the real world. That's a federal offense, 4 years old, 5 years old. And, I mean, my parents should have known right then they're fucked, because that was the start. And I wish I could tell you to get better. But I mean, like I said, that was an omen. And, you know, this book promises one of three things if we go down this path, which is jails, institution, and death. And, man, I'm here because there's no other options. So luckily they didn't arrest me or even do anything. I'm 5, you know, that would have been awkward. But I felt like what it was like to be a fuck-up, right? Like that disappointment in your family's eyes. I saw that then. And I don't think that look ever left. Around that same time, my little brother came into this world. I have an older sister. And he had some challenges. And he wasn't born with the same gifts that a lot of us are born with, and it required a lot of attention from my mother. And, you know, it's funny, when you tell these stories, you have the benefit of hindsight. I've done a lot of step work between when I got sober to now. So if you heard this 3 years ago, it'd be that bitch. But now it's my mother, and I could say that. And you know, we grow. But she tried the best she could with the tools available. And listen, I'm from the 80s. It wasn't like there was Google. Parents did the best they can. And my mom, even back then, was working full-time. My dad was working full-time. You know, we didn't have any money given to us. So what we got, we earned. And after a long day at work, my mom had to deal with this kid who's not picking up on the things that children are supposed to pick up on. And I don't know this. I'm 5, right? All I know is mom's not here anymore. Mom's got nothing to do with me anymore. And when I look back on my life and, you know, a lot of work to get through this, the first sign of my addiction being my disease to alcoholism and other things down the road was this need for attention and what I was willing to do to get it. That was the first drug of choice I had. And I learned very quickly that if I got in trouble, Mom had to put down what she was doing and spend some time beating my ass. And I learned to enjoy the ass whooping. Now, how many of us in alcoholism literally put ourselves through pain for some sort of sick fucking pleasure? I started that at 5 years old, man. And it didn't get better. The trouble just kept getting worse because just like with alcohol, you build a tolerance. Mom built a tolerance. Oh, just the teacher calling? Not suspended? No big deal, right? So I'm chasing. And I think the key trend you'll see in my story is since then I've been chasing. And until I found these rooms, I would have been on that destiny to chase forever, because that's what drugs and alcohol makes us do. And so I started chasing that. Now, the problem with doing bad things is slowly you start surrounding yourself with bad people. And now the neighborhood I grew up in didn't matter because I was a short bus ride away from the bad part of town. Part my parents worked so hard to keep us out of. And me, I'm an alcoholic. So at 10 years old, I'm hopping on the city bus going to hang out with the bad kids. Going to hang out with the kids that don't have family dinners 5 nights a week and don't have shoes on their feet like I got. And I chose to hang around them because those are the ones that would get in trouble with me enough for my mom to not be concerned enough to sit down and talk to me. And so I learned a couple things early on, which was, man, trouble finds you if you look for it, and you can find it anywhere. So I started coming back home to this nice neighborhood, but I'm not really that welcome because me and my friends, we cause trouble. Like, I'm the kid whose family's not allowed to go to barbecue dinners up the road because I caused a scene. This was before I even started using alcohol. But I would show my ass. I'd make it uncomfortable. That's who I am. I'm a fucking alcoholic. It's about me. And I never saw any of that, and I just kept going and going. But it felt good, that car ride home, getting bitched at by my mom. That was 20 minutes where Jason was on her mind. The trouble gets worse, you know, and then the problem when you get into trouble, you get this reputation. And we have all heard those movies, oh, you fuck with the baddest person, that's how you establish. Well, when you're the worst kid and you're in trouble, now the trouble's looking for you because people who want to get in trouble want to look for you to get into trouble. So it just escalated. Then on top of that, my brother's starting to get, he's only 3 years younger than me, we're getting older. And man, the streets are mean. Bullying's a big thing now, but in the 80s it was just get tough. Well, he can't get tough, so I had to. And I'd come home and I protected my brother, that's my family. But now you get a reputation for violence, and just like the reputation for trouble, once you get a reputation for these things, you start chasing it, you start enjoying it. Again, this pleasure in pain. I don't know what it is, I took pleasure in pain. And man, it felt good in around middle school the first time I smoked a joint. Because now I felt okay, I don't need to chase anymore. For that night, and literally just that night, I didn't care what mom fucking thought. I didn't care what anybody thought. I didn't care what people were. I felt balanced. And shortly after comes the booze. But same shit, when you're young and you're getting alcohol, who are you attracting? You're not attracting the kids trying to get off to college. You're attracting the kids trying to get fucked up in gym class. So that was my circle of friends. And it's funny because at the time, oh, it's circumstance. Bad luck happens to Jason. But what recovery taught me is, no, I keep putting myself in these horrible situations. No wonder there's this dark, dark cloud over me. And this dark cloud followed me, man, and it teased me with a little bit of sunshine in the wrong ways. You know. I liked making money. And I learned there's easier ways. I watched my parents bust their ass. It's a common thread. I didn't want to work like they did. And I watched them wait by the phone when their company announced there'd be layoffs at 5 o'clock on Friday and we're going to call you if you have a job or not. And watch my parents, literally on the edge of their seats, how they fucking paying the bills at the end of this month. And they buffered it. And my selfish ass is complaining that mom didn't pay attention to me whilst I got my brother who can't feed himself at 6 years old running around, right? And this is that selfishness that just manifests throughout our disease. And as we try to treat it and as we try to make it worse, at least in my instance, the fucking demons got darker. Because you put someone like that now already with a young age, you call it a juvenile delinquent, not being allowed at friends' houses. You're labeled. And a lot of people in this room get labeled for shit they never even did, half as bad as me, because someone wants to look at you and say you look this way. So we get labeled. And I fucked up because I chose to get labeled. I didn't have to. I chose that shit. And it followed me for a long time. So I think by sixth grade, the first time I realized it's fun to make money actually is fifth grade, and I'm violent. And I don't know how it is nowadays in school, but in my time, if we're going to fight, it's like, all right, I'm going to meet you on the playground after lunch or something like that. So me and John Liner, John Liner was big, and we all made fun of him for being fat, and jokes on me because I'm fucking sitting up here obese. But he was fat, and I probably called him fat, and now we're going to fight. And I'm like, man, we got 3 hours till lunch. I started selling tickets to this fucking fight. Pay-per-view before there was pay-per-view. I swear to God, I think I made like $13 in fifth grade on a fight. And we fought, and I took the money, and we get to the principal's office, and I know I'm getting sent home. But this asshole took the money. Now I felt rage for the first time. I'm a fucking entrepreneur. That's my money. Like, as I'm on fourth step, and I, as the principal now, as the asshole a couple weeks ago, right? But the principal took my money. And that should have been my sign, there ain't no easy ways. Right? Because that's been the story of my life. Anybody who's hustled in social game or did whatever, none of us are sitting here with that money in our pockets still, right? And I should have learned that in fifth grade. But I'm an alcoholic, man. I don't learn shit until it's too late. Middle school is tough for me, man. I don't know. Your body starts changing. Your friends change. I went to a different school outside of my district. I fucking hate it. I hated it. And so there was a lot of fights over stupid shit. But I learned. Man, and my dad's my best friend till today. And we went to Costco, and I saw the Snicker bars on sale. And I said, oh, shit, we could sell those at school. So I loaded up on Blow Pops and Snickers and double, triple my money. And I was doing that. That was sixth grade. But by seventh grade, that's dime bags, right? And by eighth grade, who else knows what it is? This is fucked up. But this is what I do. There's never enough. And now I'm chasing it. By ninth grade, I'm buying a car for myself, cash. And my parents are wondering, where the fuck am I getting money for a new Jetta? This is who I was. The trouble comes. And what the book says is the difference between an alcoholic and a non-alcoholic is when there's a consequence too great, it doesn't matter to me. And the first time that it's actual documented evidence that I'm an addict, I'm an alcoholic, it's right around our 16th birthday, man. One of my friends, I guess statute of limitations has expired, but one of my friends' moms caught us smoking weed. And this bitch, Karen, before Karen's, pardon any Karen's in here, called all of our parents and be like, yo, your kids are over here smoking pot. You need to drug test them. Well, she didn't know we were on mushrooms and Xanax and everything else in the book. So that fucking sucked. Now they're all packed up together. Well, we won't let the kids get their licenses unless they can pass a drug test. Well, fuck all you. You're not addicts. They all passed the drug test and got cars and licenses. I'm sitting there fucking catching rags shotgun because I'm still failing drug tests and I can't get clean. So I found the loophole because that's what addicts and alcoholics do. And I bought my own goddamn car, part of my GD. But absolutely. Which is the reason probably by 17 I was kicked out the house. And I knew better. I knew better. And I did. I graduated high school and I got a scholarship. And I went off to college. With my ego swollen, I don't even need mom and dad. I'm going to college for free. I'm making money more than them. I got a nicer car than them. What the hell can they teach me? And all their warnings, all this life, and it's ironic because what I was chasing was that attention, but when I'm finally getting it, I ignored it. It's a fucking alcoholic delusion right there, right? But it's present. And man, the more I tell the story, sometimes I get embarrassed because I'm like, holy shit, you were that dumb. But I'm sick. I'm sick, and I have a disease. And that's just who I am. But here's the beautiful thing, man. It only gets worse. Am I right? College. It's like a promotion. Now, the part I left out about my neighborhood, and this is the coolest thing about living in like a small neighborhood that's properly placed, not too expensive, but not poor, is you get the right kind of people around. And again, this is where fate just happens. So my house is in a circle, and my house is like exactly on the opposite end. And on each corner are two very influential people in my story. On the right is Judge. She's a judge. That'll come and play in a couple more years, don't worry. On the left is my best friend's parents. Now, my best friend, they moved into the neighborhood about a week after us from Kingston, Jamaica. And I'm young. I didn't realize that owning nightclubs in Kingston, Jamaica means there's a certain lifestyle behind that. You don't just own nightclubs in Kingston, Jamaica in 1990. And it was true. The guy was hardcore, still in prison today. That's later down the road. But this was my influential. And they were my second parents, man. Marcia's mom beat my ass more than my own mother. I mean, that's what raised me. But as you get older and you start picking up on things, and you realize your business partner's with my dad, but you're out all night, and he's sleeping all night. What's really going on? And for him, the business was a front for what he was imported from Jamaica into the U.S. Well, I found out about that, and I'm a greedy motherfucker. I want in. I want in. So now I got the plug. And I'm an alcoholic who's drinking and making dumb decisions and showing my ass and coming to school drunk. But I got something nobody else has. That's valuable. So, man, send me off 10 hours away to college knowing this is in the back pocket. And I'm going to be good. Fresh start, fresh opportunity, nobody knows me. First weekend there, some real shitty cousin of alcohol. Burned real bad. I fucking hated it. Next day in the road, 10 hours down, drive up with a trunk full. Doesn't take long to be the boss of a small city. And anybody who's in these rooms knows you don't just get there, right? Like, that's a grimy, grimy, hard life. And like I was saying, even in elementary school, when you have a reputation for something, everybody wants to question that reputation. Now, it's funny because today I'm dealing with this at home about Grand Theft Auto and the effect it has on kids. But I grew up in the 90s with the gangster movies, with Goodfellas and Godfather, and Belly came out in my senior year in high school. So in my genius head, I'm the spawn of the Tony Montana and Tommy from Belly Had a Baby. That's me. That's a character I created to uphold this reputation. But Jesus Christ, that was way bigger than the britches I was wearing. It's too late to admit that shit now. So the problems get worse. The trouble gets harder. And you know what's funny is you think you have friends, and everybody tells you they got your back, and everybody's got your back until the second shit goes down. And you're there alone. Then you're there looking in front of the people who love you the most, telling them you fucked up again, and you don't know why. And that's what the disease does. I think it calls it, I want to be precise, pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. Man, probably from 5 years old to about 25 years old, that was the story of every day of my life. And look, I feel through exploring my higher power, I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be exactly at this moment, which means every bit of my story went down exactly the way it was supposed to. But shit, did I ever play with fire? And so, federal felony at 5. That was a joke. That's something I could laugh about. I started school up there probably June, January, so not even a year later. I'm on a RICO charge, facing the rest of my life in prison. They said we created a gang whose sole purpose was to distribute narcotics. And really, we were just a bunch of drunk college kids doing stupid shit, but I just happened to have the plug. Well, now life's real. But God is elusive, and God is funny because he's there when you look for him. And when you look back, you can see him everywhere. And man, my God is freaking great, and he's graceful. Because my roommate and my co-defendant, his dad is a DEA agent out of Michigan and one of the big top dogs. So at least we have a fair fight. And it turns out there we're missing some links, and they were really just trying to put the clamps on some dumbass kids who are big suit. And things go away, more or less. The problem is you can never really walk from the fucking feds because they'll find a way. So not even 2 weeks later, face my second life sentence in a year. And it's fate, man. I walk into my apartment, and again, I'm selling. Man, you catch me anytime, and I deserve it. I deserve it. But God fucks with you. You never get the lesson for what you're actually doing. You got to get clues and be detectives, right? Well, by chance, and I'm cocky, and I'm like, I beat this shit. I'm hot shit. My grandma just passed away. I'm like, my fucking head is at least this big. Like Stewie from Family Guy times 10, man. My shit is just ego. And again, I think I'm Tommy Buns and Tony Montana, so who the fuck are you, right? And now I'm going ham because I just lost the one person who always gave me the love I needed. So she died in November. By January, I'm locked up again. And this time I'm real fucked because in Florida they got these stupid ass things called mandatory minimums. And it turns out doing drugs Well, someone 17 when you're 18 is deliverance of a controlled substance to a minor. When you're 500 feet from a school, it's deliverance of a controlled substance to 500 feet of a school. 5-year mandatory minimum. When there's 5 chicks there, that's 5 counts, that's 25. Mandatory minimum. Now these officers who were kindly doing their job, I was like, where's my wallet? Because you gotta get booked. So they take my license out. Behind my license is my fake ID because I'm an alcoholic, man. I need booze. I'm getting it. I had a fake ID when I'm 15 years old. This is the first time it's ever been questioned. He throws my driver's license on the floor, brings me in on the fake ID, which now just went from a misdemeanor to a felony. Because when you use it to buy booze, it's a misdemeanor. But when you use it to fuck yourself into jail, it's fraud. It's a felony. Now, the tomato plants in the closet, that's a different story for a different day. I don't know nothing about that shit. But 25 years mandatory minimum. Took 9 months to get a bail hearing. Now, when you're facing 25, they don't put you in there with the misdemeanor potheads.
No.
They don't put you with the credit card fraud. You're in there with the people facing the rest of their lives in prison. County jail is a shit show. So 9 months, knowing I'm facing the rest of my life in prison with no bond hearing. Now, I finally get that bond. Bet your ass I'm a piss clean, right? Not me. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a drug addict. I just thought I need to go back for 7 more months because I can't fucking pass the drug screen. Facing 25 years in prison. I'm sick. There's no consequence great enough for me. Now, luckily, I forgot all about this part, but in that high school, early college age, the wrong friends convinced me, and very openly, to join a gang. So I was in a street gang, which probably is the reason I'm alive today, because it helped me get through some really fucking shitty situations. But man, imagine being my parents, having college fun. Look at all this shit. Now, I never felt anything like I did when I had to look at them between the little glass on the phone, knowing that damn well there ain't nothing they could do to help. There ain't no bond. There's nothing. Forever. You know, they're not young. They might be, most likely this is the last time I'm going to see them. So, I've got to live with that. I watched my dad, when I finally got out on bond and go to find a good lawyer. We go to 7 straight lawyers who tell me, unless you snitch, get ready to spend your life there. Each one, man, I watched my dad age 10 fucking years. I watched the man who's never cried in front of me cry 7 different times. But my dad's cool, man. He's like, you don't fucking snitch. We'll ride to the next lawyer. We'll find another one. We're going to fight the shit. But if you go, at least you're going to live, and at least you don't have to worry about what's going to happen to us. That's great advice, especially for a knucklehead like me. I just want to get out and get hot, get drunk. And look, man, the other side of the neighborhood, so on one side you got the Jamaican family who got me into this situation. Now we got the judge. And the judge knows this lawyer whose number's not in the phone book, who, this ages me a little bit, but he was a prosecuting attorney under Janet Reno, who was the attorney general under Bill Clinton. And he retired and only takes select cases in the right circumstances. This guy agrees to meet with us and he takes my case. And man, God is good, because no other lawyer in the world would have been able to beat this case. And I'm here today. I'm still supposed to be in prison for 2 or 3 more years. And I'm free. Now, I fucked up after that, but yeah, I beat that case because of a great lawyer. And I went right back to it. And it's so funny, because when I was locked up, man, I'll never forget this man who found God. And I'm wondering, how do you find God locked behind these doors? And he kept telling me, when I get out of here, I'm going straight to church. I'm going to go straight to church. And every day, I get so fucking sick of it, man. Stop telling me you're going to church. And finally, he's about to get out. He's like, man, I'm going straight to church. I'm like, tell me what's up with church. He's like, man, my crack pipe is in the third pew. And I'm like, that's a motherfucking addict. I get you, bro. This is what our disease does, man. No matter how bad a shit we're facing, we're looking at something else. I rebuild, but I identify as a piece of shit, so I marry someone who wants to be with a piece of shit. And again, another option of putting the wrong people around me. And I rebuilt my life, and I'm making a hell of a lot of money. And I'm relatively sober. I'm drinking like crazy, but my life's okay. By no means in here am I at that point. And ironically, I tell my wife I'm a leaver because she's an addict. Imagine that. Well, the next day, she cleans out the business, takes every fucking penny, and here I am with $13 and a t-shirt. Start from scratch. I go down a spiral I've never seen before. My life got dark. I thought all that was dark. That was funny, bro. If y'all ever seen Goodfellas, this is the part where it goes from the jokes to where it's now these people are getting off in the basement. And helicopters flying over. I wish I could tell you it got better, but man, I don't have enough time. Just know, this shit spirals till death. We got a choice. And my higher power was always there for me. And this is how my higher power saved my life. And man, you all ever get that feeling where you know something really bad is about to happen? I'm having this feeling now. It's fucking steady. And I'm still going to the spot and I'm still fighting it. That's my ego. I'll be alright. But in my deepest heart, I know I'm dying. And I'm dying like tomorrow. And there's not a doubt in my mind. And I can't stop. I'm crying as I'm getting shit-faced drunk to get enough courage to call the plug to get down there and get what I really need. 6 a.m., probably 2 days after I start having that feeling, I wake up to a text from my buddy Matt. Now, me and Matt got in plenty of trouble in high school, but he's normal, man. College came, he started studying, he started grades, he's got 2 kids, he's a teacher. We don't talk, man. He serves me no purpose. But he's like, bro. I was like, what's up? He's like, I'm so glad to hear you're alive, man. Last night I had a dream that I was at your funeral. And I pause. I'm like, do you know why I died? He's like, no, all I know is everybody was whispering. Now, in my type of neighborhood, the worst thing a parent could have to deal with is an overdose child or a child from drugs or alcohol because all the fucking neighbors are pss, 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 pss. And it's obvious. Nobody's there to console. And it hit me because I'm like, man, that's an omen. And my life's been filled with these omens and I just continue to fight them. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to go get help. I need to go get help. I got help confused with get right, and I ended up getting right instead of getting help again. And I don't know, man. It just happens like that, right? Like, fuck, I tried. I wanted to. I would have passed a lie detector. That shit, nope. And my sister, who lives in California, 3 hours behind, so I'm back in my bed feeling right, ready to take my 11 a.m. nap. And hopefully not light the mattress on fire. My sister sends me a text. Hey, I need you to call me. And me and my sister are close, man. She's always been there to like make sure I'm not dead, but not tell mom and dad what I'm doing. But if I'm about to die, she'll tell them just enough. And she tells me she had a dream I died. She was at my fucking funeral. Now, these people I haven't spoken 20 years. My buddy Matt doesn't even know I'm a junkie. Doesn't know I'm an alcoholic. So now I need help. But the incarceration passed like mine. The last thing I was going to do was go to a state institution. I wasn't that desperate. I don't know why. So I thought I surrendered. But God has fucking angels, man. And I'm outside of my neighborhood. And this old lady that I live by, man, bless her heart. She's probably one of the reasons I'm standing here today. She saw me struggling, and she'd always see me with, like, wounds of my wars in the middle of the night and shit. And she was a nurse. I didn't know that part. So she knew exactly what I was. And she came out to me and with dear, what can I do to help? I was like, I need $500 to get into this detox. She wrote me a check for $500. Did I go straight to that detox? No. But I was smart. I said, I'm only going to use half on what I need. The other half, not. Alright, well, I surrendered, man. I was going to die. Shit went bad and I knew it. And Ms. Pat saved my life. 2 days later, I hit my knees with step one. And I went to get help. Went to Sunrise Detox Center. I said, I'm going to go here. I'm going to get back to my life. I'll give it the 10 days. I'm good. That's not a real surrender. I thought I surrendered. And so much part of this recovery is you think you have something down only to get told a week later you're not even close. I thought I surrendered. And thank God I had a good therapist there who convinced me to go to rehab, because while I was at rehab, my life changed. I got introduced to this book, Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous, the best fucking book I've ever read in my life. It saved my life. And I had a therapist there that was able to get through to me and able to get me to understand that I'm not my past, and that what I did is no different than what every other addict and alcoholic does. We're F5 tornadoes destructing everything that comes to our life. And I learned to stop breaking the mirrors I'm looking at when I'm brushing my teeth and look myself and smile and start being proud of the man looking back at me. And that was the growth that started happening up there, and that was my step one. Now, for me, step two is my favorite one at the time. It says just like this: came to believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. Well, shit, the only power I've been messing with has been tearing me up. Now, I'm going to tell you guys right now, my God is not your God. My higher power is mine. This book gave me the permission to create one that fits my needs, and I needed that because a religious God doesn't make sense to me. But I refer to my higher power as God, and God is the reason I'm alive today. So, man, step two was pretty easy. Also, who else could have given me these omens besides God? Somebody above myself. I didn't tell them to call me. This one's easy. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. I have "as we understood Him" underlined. That gives me the ability to say, yeah, I could curse to my God. I don't have to pray inside of a room to my God. I could be honest with my God. I could scream at my God. I could get screamed at by my God. And man, I'm ready to turn my will over. Everything I've done has been fucked up. And I've already been in jail, and I've already been in an institution, and I know the last place to go is death. I think it's time to try a higher power. And so the first three steps weren't hard for me. That shit was easy, and my therapist made sure I was going through it, and I had a temporary sponsor there. 4 and 5. I see a lot of people come out on step 4. To me, it felt like having a wound surgically removed. That wound was festering and smelling and fucking infected. And the longer I let it sit, the sicker I got. And although that surgery hurt like hell, and it hurt to be honest with myself in a way I had to be honest with. Man, you ever have that massive tooth infection when it finally gets pulled? You just feel better? That's what the 4th step was for me. Right away. I'm not my past. Now the best part was the 5th step, because a guy like me ain't ever telling a guy, another man, anything about my past, any vulnerabilities. But right around this point, at 37 at the time, 37 years old, I learned what it was like to be a man, what it meant to be a man. Every conception I had of what manhood was toxic and bullshit. Being able to whoop somebody's ass, that ain't a man. Being able to steal from somebody to fucking put more money in your pocket, that ain't a man. I learned being vulnerable, sharing my love, my emotions, my feelings, my stories with other people. That's being a man, being a good spouse, being a good friend. That's being a man, and being honest enough to tell this other person how fucked up my life is. And I got the courage to finally be a man at 37 years old. And that was my step 4. And yeah, it hurt. I did a lot of bad shit. Like I said, you don't get to where I got without having to do bad shit. I did that. And that's between me and my higher power. And I feel forgiven because I forgive Him, because my God is merciful. 5 was nearly impossible to me the first time around. There's no way in hell I'm going to sit across from another man and share this shit. But just like that first surgery, this is like the stomach flu, man. Now I got these... You don't just stop halfway. You got to get it all out. And as soon as I started that verbal vomit, it didn't stop. And I wasn't going to leave a chunk in there. And I did exactly what the book said, which was be as thorough as I could be and be as honest as I could be. And through plenty of fucking tears and plenty of shame, my eyes started to lift from the floor to the man across from his eyes as I felt human again. And I learned something. In these rooms, I'm not a badass and I'm not different. I'm just like everybody else. And that fucking felt good. Because I don't need to get jumped into a street game to feel at home. This is my tribe. And I learned that in my 5th step, and I'm so grateful for that. I sit up here just to be proud of who I am, because I know I'm just like every one of you guys. And we're fucking miracles. I don't meet too many miracles. We're a room full of them. And I learned that in step 5. And for me, you know, my spiritual transformation is coming through all of this. I'm learning my higher power has always been there, and I'm learning how to seek Him, and I'm learning how to communicate. And that's what this program is all about, and it's teaching me throughout the steps. But as I just mentioned, for the last however long the fuck I've been talking, I am loaded with character defects. I'm a fucking asshole. I'm selfish. I'm violent. I'm rude. I'll take your shit and laugh about it. I'll help you find it. And I don't care. I didn't want to do that anymore. But I didn't know how to fix that. The men in this room, the women in this room, in the center of this room, and when I say the center of the room, the ones walking the steps, the ones who do the shit, the ones you see laughing outside the meetings, those are the ones who saved my life because they showed me how to do it. They showed me how to change my life, and I changed everything about my life. And God is the one who made that possible, and it all started with being ready to have those defects removed. Next was easy for me. The only hard part was humbly. I didn't know what that meant. I still am just learning. But I did the best I could to humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. And that's all this book asks us to do. Practice. When I do it today, I'm a lot better at it. I'm a lot humbler. I practice these principles. I practice these steps every single day. Just like an athlete has to practice. And I'm getting better at it. And I'm a much humbler man today than I was. But I still just call myself humble, which makes me not. Right? So I got some growth to do. Shit, luckily, paper's cheap. Because I had to make a list of all the persons I've harmed. It felt good. Just starting the names. And I love how Bill tells us to do it. Just start writing the names and let it flow. Don't write what happened. It's not just people, it's institutions. Y'all already heard me call a principal doing his job an asshole, an officer who had every reason to arrest me, a son of a bitch. Like, those are harms. Fuck 20, 30, 40 years off my dad's life just for each goddamn lawyer, and I tapped at him doing it. And then to go back, harms. My poor mother, who disowned me because of that. What kind of mother has to be forced to be in a position to disown her firstborn son because of the pain I caused her? I did that. And I had to write it down, but it felt good. Because as my sponsor told me in the fifth step, I'm just like everybody else. And nobody's perfect. And the people outside these rooms are fucking up just as bad as us. They're just not honest enough to admit it. So we're grateful because we have a solution and a way to get it off our chest. And it's funny because right when I got to rehab, the first thing I wanted to do was step 9. I wanted to tell everybody I'm sorry. Hey, I'm sober. I was a dickhead because I did drugs, not because I'm a dickhead. And accept my apology. But something in my stupid, broken brain told me just take this advice. Don't do it till it's ready. Because if it was me, I would have done step 1, done 4 halfway, gone to 9, and raised my hand. I'm ready to sponsor some people. I did some shit. But by the time I got to treatment, though, I did have a full surrender, and I was at God's mercy. Man, here's where it gets awesome, man. You make these amends. And listen, I'd love to sit up here and tell you all of them went great. As of a week ago, my mom still is unable to forgive me, and I have over 3 years sober today. It's okay. She has that right. I have to be okay with that. But every other amends I made went awesome. Better than I expected. Better than the twisted story I told myself of how it was going to go to put it off for as long as I put it off. But each of these things, what they do is they took this fucking massive weight that I've been carrying around since I'm 5 years old. And each time I'm taking a little one of these steps, they start falling off. And I'm walking around with less pressure. That monkey, they're saying that monkey off your back, I didn't know what it meant until that monkey was off my back. And holy shit, it feels good, man. It feels good. And by this point, you're starting to do things. This doesn't happen overnight. Now I got some time in the program. Now I've seen some miracles. And holy shit, I'm lit up. 10, 11, and 12, these are the fucking integrity steps. These are the things that don't matter what you're doing at the meetings. These are the things that doesn't matter how you're presenting yourself. This is the thing between you and God. This is where my program lies for the remainder of my sobriety, which is one day at a time by God's great mercy. But man, just today, continue to take personal inventory, and we were wrong, promptly admitted it. I did that. I fucked up. And today I'm the type of man who, when I'm wrong, I promptly admit it because it gets on my inventory. And I'll have to let it fester. Prayer and meditation. I prayed right before I came up here. I pray in the morning. I start my days with a gratitude list. I meditate. I'm not perfect, man. I'm still going to flip some asshole off on the highway and they cut me off. But now I'm not popping a pistol at them. I'm getting better. I'm practicing this shit. And you know what? With more practice and more thing, I'm going to become that ideal man that I'm working to be. And the reason is because of step 12. This is the step that Bill calls vital. After having a spiritual awakening, which I most definitely did, I love God and I love my higher power, as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. First off, I have practice highlighted. Because anybody in here ever go to the gym? Your first time lifting them weights, you ain't doing what you want to. You ever try to run a marathon and run it your first attempt? We suck at everything we try the first time, and this is going to be no different. But we practice it, and we get better just like everything else. And I practice these principles in all my affairs, and my life revolves around service. The man I am today, I have the beautiful experience of watching three people I was involved get their one-year chip last week. And all of them got to share a little bit of gratitude for me being in their life. That's what Step 12 does. That drives me to stay sober. I'm engaged to get married to the most wonderful woman in the world because I practice these principles in all of my affairs. I fuck up. Guess what, man? We're going to be saying sorry for the rest of our life. We don't need the book to tell us that, but I did. And you know what? I'm the first person to talk to a newcomer. If y'all ever see me at a meeting, I'm here to spread the message. This program saved my life. And there's no doubt about it. There's no way even a delusional man like me can tell you anything else. Alcoholics Anonymous and Bill Wilson are the most impactful things that ever happened to Jason. Because if it weren't for this, the third thing that's supposed to happen would be, which is death. I'm alive today because I embraced this program. I got in the center of this program. And I practice it every fucking day of my life from when I wake up to when I go to sleep. And I'm far from perfect, man. I don't take anybody's inventory because mine is harsh. I still fuck up. Just today. But now I don't hide from it. And you know what? What I've seen is life is still hard in recovery. I go to challenges. But it's a lot easier when you don't let them spiral into 4 months of bad times or 4 years of bad times. I'm able to have the courage because I have a faith in a higher power to face the problem head on and know that God... Listen, every single person in this fucking room has survived 100% of the worst days of our life. All of us. So how stupid do we have to be to think the next one's taking us down? That's not logical. That's God. My higher power says the next thing you go through, I'm going to get you through. Just like every other time, 100% of the time. But now I'm enlightened enough to fucking realize that. That's my higher power. 100% of the time, it's worked. Bill Wilson showed me the way to find it. If y'all can't find it, this book will show you how. Guys, thank you so much for letting me share my strength with you.
My name is Tia and I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Just some gratitude. I'm glad that y'all are here tonight and I'm glad that I'm here tonight. The alignment that we're right here at this moment.
Yeah.
That was awesome. Thank you again, Jason.
Yeah.
Thank you.